This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Welcome to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of low-budget cinema.
Is another apocalyptic prediction about to come true? Winds of death sweep across the world, and whole continents will be cast adrift in an ocean of blood.
Hi, I'm Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, action, exploitation, kung fu, and women in prison movies from the 1970s to today. Be sure and check out reallyawfulmovies.com for reviews, interviews, lists, and terrific movie giveaways.
From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 53, Wes Craven's Swamp Thing. So you can call this Dr. Holland's opus, but there's no Richard Dreyfuss to be found. It's a mad scientist movie featuring Alec Holland.
Yes, Dr. Alec Holland.
Doctor,
yeah. Yes, the botanist, Dr. Alec Holland. And this is based on the DC comic character Swamp Thing. And I'm a huge fan of Swamp Thing. So let's just go back a bit. This movie came out in 1982. Now, I've loved comics for as long as I can remember. And as a child, I don't know how this came into my possession, but I think when Swamp Thing was released theatrically, Burger King was having a promotion, and they were putting out glasses, right, tumblers with Swamp Thing on it, and I guess my father or mother took me to Burger King and
for the express purpose to procure such a glass.
Well, it's probably a Whopper, but anyway, I got this glass, and I remember just being fascinated by this glass, and that was my first introduction to Swamp Thing. And it was a tie-in with the movie, and to this day, I've been scouring every avenue I can to get that glass back. I've been looking at eBay, I've been looking at Amazon, what have you, flea markets. I want that glass, okay? So that started my love of the character of Swamp Thing. Swamp Thing was actually created by really, really famous character. He was created by Len Wein and Bernie Wrightson in 1971, and Swampy, as he's officially known, was, he had a number of starts and stops. The character was completely refigured and revitalized by comic superstar Alan Moore, okay? But we're not going to talk about that. This is not a comics podcast. although I will say the Alan Moore run of Swamp Thing is probably one of the best comic runs of all time. Right up with Neil Gaiman's The Sandman, for those who are comic fans. But this movie is based on the pre-Alan Moore version of Swamp Thing. So this is Alec Holland, a man becoming a plant, so to speak, right? Mm-hmm. And the other interesting thing about Swamp Thing is it was directed by Wes Craven. A young Wes Craven. So this was made, obviously, before Nightmare on Elm Street. This was post-Last House on the Left, post-Hills Have Eyes, Hills Have Eyes 2, I believe, but pre-Nightmare on Elm Street. So I think that we've made
was he sort of sticking true to that conception of the character? And, you know,
There are differences. I mean, there are differences in the origin, and we'll get to that when we talk about the plot. One of the things is, Alec Holland was a botanist who was working on a biorestorative formula in the comic books.
Yeah, it's weird. I guess all this stuff sort of predated genetic splicing,
right?
And putting like fish genes in a tomato so it can be more, resistant to whatever. And this is sort of predated all that stuff. So it's hilarious in the movie when they start talking about,
recombinant.
DNA, yeah, all that. Yeah, it's just hilarious.
Yeah, that was in the movie. That was in the comic book. He was working on a biorestorative formula, which was going to restore plants and make them grow anywhere. Somewhat similar, but I mean, the other interesting thing is the character played by Adrienne Barbeau, ex-wife of John Carpenter, was a bit of a scream queen herself. I mean, she's been in, Creepshow, The Fog, Escape from New York, etc. Her name is Alice Cable, and she was kind of like a portmanteau of a couple characters from the comic, one being Matt Cable, and the other one being Abigail Arcane, okay?
Huh.
So, Abigail Arcane ended up in the sequel to this movie, Return of the Swamp Thing, played by Heather Locklear in 1989, directed by Kim Minorski. But anyway, the thing is, Yes, I mean, the origin was a little different, just a wee bit. But the one thing that remained true is, yes, Alec Holland, Swamp Thing, and his arch enemy was Anton Arcane. So, yeah.
Huh. Now, speaking of the methane depths of the swamp, I admit that I have not seen Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Mm.
So, you know, for a sort of a swampy type feature, to, you know, use the term you used earlier, swampy, how does this compare?
You know, it's interesting, because there are allusions, in my opinion, to Creature from the Black Lagoon, and also even Frankenstein, and that's when Swamp Thing is carrying off the unconscious Alice,
damsel,
right?
Yeah.
But, I mean, the one thing about Creature from the Black Lagoon is that he is the villain, right? Whereas in this one, Swamp Thing's a hero. I mean, this is a comic book flick, right?
True.
But there are definite allusions. And
yeah, Creature from the Black Lagoon is really interesting aesthetically. And it's got a really neat look, and I think Swamp Thing as well. There's just something sort of really cool about emerging from the depths of a swamp.
So the rubber suit?
Okay, not so much the rubber suit, but the original creature. And
yeah.
There's something, you know, we talked about...
Well, that's the thing I loved about the character even as a child. I mean, I just love the look of the character. Growing up, I've always loved, you know, like the monster, you know, the exterior of the monster with the interior of the... you know, the heart of gold,
the heart of
right?
It, yeah.
And I find that in Frankenstein. I find that in Swamp Thing as well. I mean, obviously, you know, he didn't ask to become what he became.
No.
He became what he became through circumstance. But at the same time, you know, he's a hero, but he's rejected by society because of his appearance, right?
And I've always been fascinated by things happening underwater as well, whether it be your aqualung or those like old timey, you know, brass kind of, those old timey diving, outfits with the giant bronze or whatever it's made out of, you know, helmets and the tube, and there's something just really unique. And we were talking about, I guess, in Prom Night, I think I mentioned that a hotel was really not a scary place to set. A film, like an abandoned motel, yes, or an off-the-road motel, yes,
but not a
brightly lit hotel. But in the opening scenes of this, like a swamp is creepy.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in the Everglades and seen alligators in Florida. Like swamps smell terribly of methane. They're creepy as hell. It's just a fantastic setting. And I think probably it was a little bit lost in this because, as I said, he's the hero, and it could have benefited from... you know, this is a great locale for a real villain to emerge from the swamps, and I wanted Craven to take this to darker places.
Right.
But I guess we'll get to that later.
Yeah, yeah. No, but I was going to say again about underwater. I mean, there's a lot of horror movies that have taken place underwater. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen The Abyss by James Cameron, but I believe that's
good one.
You know.
Yeah.
But I mean, the reality is, I mean, as somebody who's
Ed Harris,
it's great. The great fortune of diving and snorkeling through the Great Barrier Reef in Australia. I mean, wow. I mean, it's a world down there we don't understand.
Yeah.
You know, I would not be surprised if I saw the Creature from Black Lagoon emerging all of a sudden and you know, snatching my leg. But then again, I'm not a...
Well, it is like the final frontier. I mean, James Cameron said the ocean, really, and his diving exploits and going down to, you know, hundreds of kilometers beneath the surface, this amazing wonders to behold, and strange creatures.
Yep.
Maybe
yep.
not like this creature.
Yeah.
And this is no doubt a creature feature. This is sort of a throwback to those 60s and 50s sort of monster movies. And
I think it's hard. It is. I mean, yeah. If you're looking for a Wes Craven gore fest, I'll name Elm Street or
Last House on the Left.
You know,
for sure.
Yeah. You know, something like that. No. I mean, this is definitely a throwback to a creature feature. And the like I said, the earlier generation of Swamp Thing, before Alan Moore got his hands on it, turned into something completely different and completely. Just unbelievably, like, I was just a complete mind fuck.
And you said Del Toro is handling the possible remake of that?
Yeah.
So he's going to hopefully mind fuck us with that one?
Not Swamp Thing all by himself, but Del Toro has been circling around a adaptation of the Dark Universe of the DC Comics, which would be like a team, which would include characters such as, like, Zatanna, Constantine, Dead Man, and yes, Swamp Thing. So, I mean, Del Toro...
Well,
but the thing about Del Toro is he's got a reputation for, like, circling projects, getting really into it, pre-production, I'm all set to do it, and the last one saying, you know what, fuck it, I'm not going to do it. He did it with The Hobbit, you know?
Yeah.
So then Peter Jackson had to take the reins reluctantly and made those three bloated piece of shit movies. But,
ruffle some feathers there, yeah.
Well, I mean, look, I love Lord of the Rings, but those Hobbit movies were absolutely abysmal. But anyway, Del Toro... I would love to see a true Swamp Thing movie based upon, like I said, the Alan Moore itineration of Swamp Thing, which is really, really different because, I mean, whereas in the pre Alan Moore Swamp Thing, I'm talking about the Ween and Wrightson Swamp Thing, you have a man, Alec Holland, who becomes a plant, right? Whereas Alan Moore ripped that away, and it was actually a sentient plant that believed he was a man.
Interesting.
Believed he was Alec Holland.
Yeah.
Alec Holland was dead.
Hmm.
Okay, he just had the memories of Alec Holland, and then it just goes on into these other really, really weird, bizarre, dark places. And I, like I said before, I cannot recommend Moore's run on Swamp Thing more highly.
What would he have done as a plant?
As a plant?
Yeah, unless you were one of those carnivorous, you know, Venus flytrap type plants.
He could do anything, man. He could grow like a hallucinogenic, like, tubers, they're called?
Yeah, tubers, yeah.
Yeah, out of his body, and like, people eat them, and they go on these crazy, like, acid trips. He could, like, he could, you know,
mushrooms.
He could trick himself down and go to the earth and like, you know, let's say, I don't know, Louisiana, and like end up in sprouting in Nepal. Like, he could do anything.
That is really cool.
He could regenerate any limb possible. I mean, that we saw some of this in this movie as well. And on and on. I mean, what before Moore, it was a sort of like a creature feature comic, and Moore made it into a real horror comic. And again, I mean, I'm just going to tell you, it blew my mind. Like, that, The Sandman by Neil Gaiman, and The Watchmen, like the three comics that everybody, you know, who anybody wants to explore.
Even a reluctant reader like me should explore it. Yeah. The only experience I have with comics, I don't even know if I'm getting the name right, apologies, these Italian barbers I used to go to, and had comics there, and one of them was like, I think Beast. It was like this blue, like, guy, like hairy guy,
is that
Beast Man? I don't even know what it is.
He was one of the X-Men. He was played by Kelsey Grammer in the the second or third X-Men movie.
Okay, yeah.
And I was
sort of fascinated with that, but it never got me headlong into the you know, the subculture. Mm-hmm, but mm-hmm. That was neat.
But I think we've talked comics enough. Now let's talk about this movie.
Okay, well, we got this. I guess, what is she? They don't really say what Dr. Cable is. I guess she's an engineer, presumably. Mm-hmm. So she's trying to, you know, sent from Washington, D.C. via helicopter to this, presumably, Louisiana swamp where this botany research is being done. Mm-hmm. And she's dropped off. You know, and there's some, you know, classic 80s sexism there. This is obviously an old boys club, this lab in the Bayou Swamps, and one guy receives her very poorly. You know, what's a woman doing down here, kind of thing. So it's, you know, your typical sort of sexist little element.
I believe he was a security guard who was supposed to protect Holland's research, and he said, a woman has no place around a guy like you.
Yeah. And I guess the research lab is being led by, again, this aforementioned Dr. Holland, mm-hmm. and he's sort of he's the offspring of, like, a Nobel Prize winning scientist, mm-hmm. and his sister is also working there.
It's actually his wife. Maybe did they change in the movie?
The Cable character goes in and
they kiss. And they
kiss, and then they reference it later that they're brother and sister.
Because I've seen this movie since about 8 or 9 times, right? And I mean, in the comic, it was his wife, right? And then I don't know. I just always thought to myself, like, it's sort of like a Luke and Leah thing. Like, it's bizarre, you know? Why are they kissing? Why is he kissing her in front of his wife? But yes,
and it's weird that Dr. Holland is, you know, got his, you know, his paws all over this woman who's from Washington, D.C., and mm-hmm. he's hitting on her like nobody's business. And she says, should you really be doing this? You know, she believes that, you know, his sister is actually his wife, but mm-hmm. doesn't. He doesn't reprimand her, or, you know, if I was in the position of putting the moves on this attractive Adrienne Barbeau, I would say, she's my sister, she's my sister, she's my sister, right off the bat, like, no worries, and then just roll right in. But we digress. Adrienne Barbeau, you know, she's kind of an attractive woman.
She has many a male admirer. Actually, it's funny, because I was watching the extra features, and there was an interview with Barbeau, and she was saying that, you know, when she was making this movie, it was 14-hour days, 16-hour days, and she didn't have a chance to watch the dailies. She didn't realize what she looked like, and she said that when she saw the dailies, she cringed at her hair. Her makeup,
because presumably it got curly because of the humidity.
Yeah, I mean, she just said, like, "Oh my god, I can't." I mean, I'm really happy that this movie's become, you know, what it has, and people love it, but I look terrible. I can't see myself in your hair. She did have a bit of a bouffant.
Yeah, she really did.
But Barbeau, like I said, she does have a lot of male admirers, and I don't know, we talk about nudity. We'll talk about nudity in a moment or two.
Anyway, Dr. Holland is doing this research. Now, and again, he's sort of splicing these genes together.
Who played Dr. Holland? Do you recognize him?
No.
That was Ray Wise. He was in RoboCop.
Wow, yeah. I recognize the name.
Leon Nash. You know, the one that was dancing in the techno nightclub and kicked RoboCop in the groin. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He was also on Twin Peaks, so yeah.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, no, he's working on this, I mean, like I said, in the comic it's a bio-restorative formula, but, like, in the movie it's just, like, a recombinant DNA of splicing together, like, the gene of a plant.
It's a MacGuffin, basically.
Just to get the plot going, and,
And it's also some sort of, like fertilizer as well, like magic fertilizer, because when, you know, Dr. Holland's sister spills it into the floorboards, you know, plants instantly spring mm-hmm, forth. Mm-hmm. So, obviously, this, you know, captures the attention of evil forces who want to get this formula for themselves, and that's where, you know, this group of mercenaries comes in. They're led by this ridiculous goon. Whose name is Ferret. And he looks like David Putty from Seinfeld. He's got this like big meat head. He's got a sort of fatuous ponytail. He's just a headband. He's very ridiculous.
This is the great David Hess who's playing Ferret.
Yes.
David Hess, the star of Last House on the Left and also The House on the Edge of the Park. And yeah, he is playing Ferret, but he is
pretty bad acting. He's horrible.
This movie is kind of ridiculous. But then again, you know. There's a lot of ridiculousness in this movie. I mean, a lot of it is me looking at this movie for as nostalgia, for, you know, rose-colored glasses as a child.
Yeah,
this was like the first superhero movie I ever saw, even before Superman. So, yeah, Ferret. And
So meanwhile, as you know, Dr. Holland is showing you know his you know this woman from Washington around his lab. He shows her a Cooper's digger, which looks like some sort of mole creature that is being used to, I don't know, that it's. It's got parasites on its fur that he's studying. Oh, God knows what. Anyway, the mercenaries storm in, and they're dressed in camo. You know, they break in there.
Well, what I find hilarious, too, is that this was a very, you know, high-security operation, right? There were government agents that were, you know, there were sensors. I mean, that's why Darkbolt was there, but he had to repair a sensor.
Yeah.
And the only way he can get in was through, you know, hand recognition technology.
Yeah, and helicopter. So it is really in the middle of nowhere. That's the only access.
Yeah. Like, So Ferret, in order to get in, he judo chops Barbeau.
Yeah.
You gotta love a judo chop. Yeah. You don't see enough of those in movies nowadays. And she gets knocked unconscious, and he uses her hand and gets into the lab.
Yeah.
And then we find out that one of Holland's men is actually the nefarious.
Yeah, he's undercover. He's the one who made the sexist overtures and remarks earlier on. Mm-hmm. He was apparently, I guess, he was putting on a fairly passable English accent.
But right,
he's
considering...
not. I think his name was Riker or Ritter. I think Ritter, but he's not who he seems, and he exposes himself to be a villain by pulling off his face.
Yeah.
So he's not a Brit. He's some sort of
Frenchman.
I don't know, Frenchman, well, some sort of Bond-like supervillain.
Well, it's funny you say that, because I mean, he's played by Louis Jourdan, right? And Louis Jourdan actually played the villain in Octopussy, so there you go, man.
In Octopussy, a ridiculous Bond movie where I believe he dons, I think that's the one where he dons like alligator, speaking of swamps, like an alligator disguise, and he goes like underwater and has this thing on his back and swims around.
And you know what's funny, again, like I remember seeing Octopussy in the theater as a kid. I think it came out in 83. Another thing I remember is Roger Moore dressed up as a clown.
God.
And he was like hopping along like
I think so, yeah. Just, oh, God. Yeah.
That was the dark period for James Bond. So, anyhow, things are not looking good. The security guards are all, you know, incapacitated and dead. And the formula that Holland is working on is this explosive formula.
Yeah.
And in the ensuing melee, Holland is set ablaze.
Yeah.
And he jumps to the swamp.
Not so much drumps as I guess he's shot into the swamps. But yeah, he's lit on fire. And, and obviously this is the... you know, the MacGuffin, the Deus Ex Machina, this is the thing that sets the ball rolling. And this is, you know, a lot of the radiation and some of those creature features to create giant crabs, giant, you know, your Godzillas or whatever. And whatever this, he becomes.
Swamp Thing.
Swamp Thing,
yes. He emerges from the swamp, and he is no longer
The bespectacled nerdy botanist. Mm-hmm. He's this unconvincingly attired, rubber-suited, swamp dweller.
Yeah, no, it's really funny because suit. It is. It totally is. I mean, at this point, he's no longer played by Ray Wise. He's played by stuntman Dick Durock, who actually played the character Swamp Thing in the sequel. He also played him in, there was a TV series there for 3 seasons. He played him in that as well. But in this movie, he's literally wearing like his one-piece rubber suit, and it's just so unconvincing. Yeah. Every time he moves, you can see like the bunching of the rubber, yeah. And you know, and at one point, you can even see the zipper.
Yeah,
did you notice the zipper? Yeah, that's how bad it is.
Well, it was neat. I mean, I gotta say, yeah, you're suspending disbelief here because this is a ridiculous creature feature kind of movie. But yeah, he emerges when Ferret is dunking the Adrian Barbeau character Cable into the water, attempting to drown her, and she's under. And just when you think, easy on the eyes, Scream Queen is going to meet her demise. Well, then out springs the Swamp Thing.
The moss covered arm of Swamp Thing. Indeed. Now, Swamp Thing rescues Cable, but I mean, Cable, of course, is afraid of Swamp Thing.
A rubber-suited monster.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so she runs to find a phone, and she finds this abandoned gas station manned by this kid.
It's like an Urkel.
An Urkel, exactly. This kid named Jude, right?
Yeah.
He's like Coke-ball glasses.
Yeah.
What a character is this one? I mean,
It's a little black kid who runs this, jeez, I don't know, what kind of store is this?
Yeah, it's some sort of like bait shop slash gas station He's got no parental supervision whatsoever.
No, he's got no customers. Like, it doesn't seem like a good place to set up a business.
He's got this really like weird sort of deadpan delivery. Like, I don't know if he's meant to be the comic relief or just very odd ways of for example, when he sees Swamp Thing for the first time, he goes, "There goes the neighborhood." Like, what neighborhood? What the heck is going on here?
He's a little bit of a handyman himself. Like, he manages to extract a bottle of Coke from the machine by hitting it. He's sort of got Fonz. Yeah, I was thinking that, to get the jukebox going with his fist. So that was, very interesting character. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, obviously, the henchmen are still the evil, the Frenchman's evil henchmen. There you go, there's a rhyming couplet. they are after this formula, and after her as well. And, they come after her, and the lead henchman is now that Ferret has been offed, a ridiculous, ridiculous character named Bruno.
Mm-hmm.
And he's, I think he's kind of like a Gold's Gym Vin Diesel. He's just sort of a giant galoot.
Tell me you didn't recognize Bruno. Batman? Darkman?
Yes, I did.
Pauly from Darkman.
Amazing. Yeah.
7-8 years hence, he was Pauly, but yeah, that was Bruno. Yeah.
He meets a fate similar to Pauly in this. Like, he's got no luck.
Totally. Yeah.
Later on, I guess once the once they do get their hands on the stuff, then the their notorious leader, he wants to...
Arcane, yep.
Yeah, Arcane, he wants to test it on someone. So he gives, I guess, a flask of this... A shot glass?
They're having this banquet, and, ostensibly the guest of honor is Bruno, and... Because Bruno was the one who captured the Swamp Thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, we're not even talking about, some of the powers of Swamp Thing. I mean, he's... sort of impervious to bullets. He has healing hands. Mm-hmm. He can heat, at one point.
But he can get captured easily with a net that's strung up in a tree.
So. That's true.
Yeah. His powers of perception
would never happen with the Alan Moore version of Swamp. He would just shrink down into a little sapling and, reroute in, Peru or something.
So,
so he's captured. He's got, he's only got one arm at this point because the arm got shut off. But but then again, there's the power of photosynthesis when he reaches toward the light. His arm regrows. But so Bruno's a guest of honor, and then he says, a toast to Bruno, and Bruno drinks the formula.
He does not become a Swamp Thing.
No. What does he become? He becomes this little golem-like creature with a dog face. And it's so funny because, like, you know, before he drinks a formula, he goes underneath the table, and then he emerges as this little dwarfy character. It almost reminded me of Dr. Moreau, you know, the mini Marlon Brando.
Yeah.
Following him around, but...
I, for some reason, I was thinking of Brian from The Family Guy. I don't know why.
But when he... So he becomes a dog-faced mini-me of Bruno, because when he shrunk, miraculously so did his clothes.
Yeah.
Wearing the exact same, you know, black pants and white shirt. But, so that was an unsuccessful transformation. So, Arcane decides to take the formula himself.
Yes.
And,
The formula, I guess, it's... They make great pains to explain this. The formula amplifies your essence.
Yes.
Rather than gives you the superpowers of a swamp thing. So right. I guess it's sort of, you know, if you're an alcoholic, it makes you a giant alcoholic. I don't know. But yeah, that was, I guess they said Bruno is, you know,
he was a coward or something.
A coward or a dope. They're very disparaging about poor Bruno.
Poor Bruno, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, and then they sort of...
I thought he was a more capable henchman than
Ferret, yeah. They equate his sort of, you know, obtuseness and stupidity with stature. And so he shrinks because he's stupid. That's unfair. Mm-hmm. There's lots of smart, short people. But anyway, poor Bruno becomes short, stunted, hunchbacked, dog-faced. Not a good scene.
Mm-hmm. But he does end up becomes a Swamp Thing's ally.
Yeah.
He helps him escape from prison at this point.
Yeah, he becomes a monster himself and sees it from the vantage point of Dr. Holland and Swamp Thing.
Yep, and Arcane takes a formula and becomes this weird, furry, boar-like creature with a sword. What sort of essence did he have in order to become that? And, you know, at the end of it all, he had this ludicrous fight in the swamp between Arcane and Swamp Thing. I should say, I mean,
Excalibur kind of sword in the swamp. And
once again, in the comic books, there's a concept of the Unmen. Okay, now these are basically these hastily deformed creatures that were created based upon Arcane's experimentation and so on and so forth, trying to, you know, recreate Holland's opus and Holland's formula. But so I guess these were the Unmen, and again, this is a lot of this is explored more so in the sequel that was released in 1989.
Okay.
And the sequel was extremely low budget, and it was sort of kind of played for laughs, and I don't know, it's fun, it's a great movie directed by Jim Wynorski. I love Jim Wynorski, but it's not, it doesn't do the comic justice, nor does this movie really. Mm-hmm. You know, again, I like it because of nostalgic purposes. But, you know, you're right. I mean, you're talking about the tone of the movie, and you're saying that...
Yeah, it was all over the map, and as someone with no familiarity with the DC comic character, I wanted either you're going to be campy and corny and go all out...
Yeah, and that was more like the sequel, yeah.
Yeah, or you make it as dark as possible, a la some of the later Batmans, and just to try and rekindle that sort of magic and that sort of purist... bent, which is weird too, is for a movie that's this campy and this, it has swipe cuts and all this sort of creature feature staples.
Yep, and all
but
that.
It also had staples, boobs in it, which is weird, and it didn't mesh with her sort of doffing her top and just going for a swim in the swamp. It was weird.
It's interesting you mention that though, because what we saw was...
I mean, I appreciated it.
Yeah. Well, but what we saw was a sliver of Barbo boob, right?
Yeah.
Whereas there is the fable
Barboob.
There's a fabled European cut where you see a lot more barboob.
Mm-hmm.
It's an extended bathing scene, and there's also some scenes in the in Arcane's mansion where he's partying with some him and Bruno and his henchmen are partying with a bevy of topless beauties. So that that cut. I mean, it's it was released on DVD originally, and then some mother in like some podunk town in the States or something, it was rated PG. She called up and said, "Oh, PG movies got boobs," and got pulled and got yanked, and now if you want it, it's like $200 on eBay, and everything that's being released is the American cut. But yeah.
Oh, damn.
Yeah. But so I want to ask you, like, so in the Wes Craven oeuvre, like, where would you play Swamp Thing?
Well, I mean, we discussed it. You have more antipathy toward Craven than I do.
But I'm not a fan of him. I think he's a hack, yeah.
But yeah, you think he's a hack, but I would be more charitable and describe him as a three-hit wonder. Mm-hmm. He's made three amazing films and a bunch of just total just garbage.
Right.
And I texted you earlier about like David Cronenberg, like A Dangerous Method, I think, is the worst Cronenberg movie. And because it's stilted, it has like a Masterpiece Theater kind of vibe, even though the acting was pretty good. But I thought, like, if that's his worst movie, like, Craven's worst movie is just really crap.
Well, Craven's worst movie was not Swamp Thing.
No. His lows are way lower, and his highs are not nearly as high. And yeah, he's a three-hit wonder, you would concede as well. Last House on the Left is, a minor masterpiece.
Yeah, of course. Nightmare on the Street, the original.
Yeah.
And The Hills Have Eyes, the original.
The Hills Have Eyes. Everything else, I mean... Yeah, and maybe The Serpent and the Rainbow. But we could say that three films for sure are classics, mm-hmm. and the rest sort of marginal to like absolute crap.
He made two movies with Deadly in the title that are absolutely awful. One is Deadly Blessing.
Mm-hmm. I never saw that, yeah.
And the other one is Deadly Friend, which is the one with the famous movie with Anne Ramsey getting
Getting your head with a basketball. Decapitated.
I mean, you can't blame him for doing a little foray into sci-fi with Swamp Thing, because, I mean, Carpenter's done the same, right? He's made sci-fi. But his sci-fi films are amazing. So, yeah. I mean, but once again, I mean, I love this movie only out of nostalgia.
But this was poorly directed. Okay. As well, and it was the beginning was confusing as well. Mm-hmm. It was poor. It was tone deaf, mm-hmm. and it was frankly kind of odd.
Right.
And yeah, I didn't know where it was, and so yeah, where I would put this.
And it's weird seeing David Hess, who's like the antagonist of Last on the Left, playing this sort of goofy henchman and stuff, and it just I don't know. Like I said before, like as a kid, I fucking love this movie, and I mean, like I said, if any of our listeners can track down Michael Asa's sent to me, I'm willing to pay a pretty penny. But, I must have seen this movie about 8 or 9 times. I mean, I know it's goofy, and I know that it's flawed, and objectively, I'm giving it 2.5 stars, it's a 2.5.
Yeah, and then the more we talk about it, the more themes and the more interesting it actually becomes, but actually the physical experience of watching it is not that interesting, mm-hmm. but it just touches on themes that are explored better elsewhere.
I would say
2.5 for me as well.
If somebody were to actually make a real Swamp Thing movie, mm-hmm. and really explore the characteristics it was explored.
Explore the character's roots. No pun intended. Yeah.
And if hopefully Del Toro will get around to doing it, it will be something else.
Yeah.
So you're saying 2.5 stars?
Yeah, 2.5. And so what did we learn? Should I start?
Sure, go ahead, yeah.
I learned that there's, because this is repeated, I think, 3 times, that there's, 150 different types of orchids? And they keep going on about fucking orchids. I just couldn't believe it. And how they grow in different conditions. And by the end of it, I thought, geez, I'm going to be a botanist myself. Mm. That was probably... who knows what, significance that has with the original comic book thing. But, so yeah, I learned orchids are, there's an amazing genetic diversity among, that flora.
Okay.
There you go. What did you learn?
I learned, for the first time, it's funny how willfully blind sometimes, right? And we watch things the way we want to see them, okay? So, for example, I saw Rocky 1, the very first Rocky, after seeing Rocky 3 and 4.
Yeah.
Okay, so at that point, Rocky to me was a superhero. I mean, the man could not lose, right? So when I saw Rocky 1 on video cassette and he lost, I turned to my sister and said, he won, right? Yeah. That's what they said. He won, right? So being willfully blind, growing up with the comic books, I just assumed that it's his wife. And even watching it a few days ago in preparation for this podcast, I'm like, that's his wife. Why the fuck is he kissing Adrian Barbeau in front of his wife? Why is she so nonplussed about it, But I learned that they actually made her into his sister so they can have this sort of romantic subplot between Barbeau and... And Swamp Thing. Man, the chemistry between those two, Plant and Man. But you know what? Again, they talking about the Alan Moore run yet again... There is amazing chemistry and there's actually plant human sex. That's how fucking mind blowing incredible this comic is. So I guess the takeaway from this is go read Alan Moore's Swamp Thing.
Yeah. I guess so. And also go read our site, you know, Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, www.reallyawfulmovies.com. Reviews, top 10 lists, and giveaways.
Yes.
Check it out. We'll talk to you soon.
Take care.
Thank you.